So I will now be turning the stage back to Stan Groff, who will be responding to the last three presentations.
Okay, good afternoon. This is not a geriatric chair. I have had many years of circulatory problems in my legs. So I'm making it more comfortable for myself. It's so great to see this new generation of researchers coming after this, you know, horrible 40 years, four decades, really. And it was a really strange feeling to see this kind of tool, you know, disappearing, being made unavailable. It was like knowing that we have anesthesia and still sort of using for operations like a bottle of rum, the way it was done in the Wild West. And so it's amazing to see the renaissance now that is happening. And I just hope that it's going to continue like this, that there's not going to be somebody who's going to screw it up. Because if a problem happens in this area, it's going to be blamed on psychedelics, not on the person who do it. So it's really important to, you know, that it is run by the rules, which certainly has been done. I'm sort of getting a lot of credit, and there are people who did not get the chance. I already mentioned Christina, there are quite a few others. And I would like to show Walter Pankey, since we talked about the psychedelic work with cancer patients. He was somebody who came to Spring Grove at the same time that I came. And this was his first job. He studied medicine, he had an MD degree, he had a PhD degree, and on top of the divinity degree, he was kind of an eternal student. And then, you know, already at the beginning, I mean, something that went into history, which was the Good Friday experiment when he gave psilocybin to students of theology and used niacin as a placebo. Kind of problematic because after an hour, you know, half of the people were scratching and having hot flashes, and the other people were having experiences. But it's a very famous experiment that now was repeated with much better methodology at Johns Hopkins, you know. So this was Walter. He was kind of a puer eternus. Daredevil, kind of on a motorcycle, also was known as being kind of a cheapskate. He would drive like 20 miles because there was a gas station that had cheaper gas. And Walter was really, although the impulse to do psychedelic work with cancer patients came from several different angles. It came from Aldous Huxley, from the correspondence. It came from Eric Cast, who was using LSD with cancer patients in the context of study of anesthetics or analgesics. And it was also a situation where one of the people on the staff developed, and the Spring Grove developed cancer and became very depressed and anxious, and was Sid Wolf, one person on the staff, decided, you know, why don't we try if her kind of depression and anxiety, if it's reactive, it's not, she has a good reason, maybe it's going to respond. And the session was such a success that just at the time as I was coming there, it was decided to start work with cancer patients, and Walter was the one who did the footwork and got the money. And the money came from a cigarette company for this day. So Walter and I were the two medical doctors, and we spent every Thursday in the oncological unit. We did the grand rounds, and then when these oncologists didn't have anything more to offer to the patients, then we were allowed to sit down with them and see if they would be interested in having this. Now Walter was 1971. He went to for a weekend to a cabin that they had in Maine on the ocean, and recently acquired second-hand scuba diving equipment, and he went on his own scuba diving before lunch and disappeared in the Atlantic, his body or any piece of the equipment was not found. He didn't have even a marker. So can we use the name? So this is Eva Penke and one of their children. And I think we have one more picture there. This is the research institute where we did this work. And this was a visit of Albert Hofmann in the late 60s. And on the other side, that's Alan Bonney, who was our music therapist. So this was a very exciting study, the most moving of all the studies that we did, and it was really very sad to see that it was stopped, that it could not continue. I remember the last time when we asked for money, when it was all sort of disappearing, they said, "Well, you have already proved that it works, so now it should go to the hospitals. Why would you need money for another study?" And that was the end of this experiment. I really feel deeply, deeply grateful for the enormous energy and stamina that these people from the new generation put into getting the permission for this. And we will sort of have a chance to say a few more words about Rick Doblin, who has a lot to do with this renaissance, with the fact that now so many people in so many countries in the world have the possibility to return to this research. And what's also very exciting is that we'll have now the program where we can actually teach people to sit. That's happening in CIS and hopefully some other places. Now, you heard Charlie's story, this really, once you get a sense of the potential that is there, then there is an enormous drive, to make it happen, which you certainly did, traveling first into the Amazon and then developing your own project here. And what's also exciting that I hope you continue doing the videos. We had two rooms where we were doing this research, which were both of them had built-in camera, short-circuit camera, closed-circuit camera, and we had students sitting and watching the sessions, and they would turn it on only when something interesting was happening, when people were moving, or when people were talking, and so on. And we collected 300 hours of these videos from alcoholic cancer patients, the training programs for psychologists, psychiatrists. And I understand now that the new leadership of the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center decided to reuse it just for the tape. So that whole, and you know, some of the videos that I copied for myself, they ended up in the fire of our house. So I hope that you are in the process of generating the evidence, you know, what actually happens to people, because this no way you can describe it in words. I mean, you have to really see it and hear it. Now there is, we also talked about MDMA, so there is another credit that has to be given, yeah. It's against a recent loss, you know, it's amazing person, Sasha Shalgin, who created a large number of these amphetamine-derived, we call them entheogens rather than psychedelics, I think with MDA, MDMA, MMDA, STP, 2CB, you name it. He actually, when they started chasing him, you know, discovering these new substances that were people using, he was at one point laughing and said that he could make one that would be called FDA. Again, amazing, you know, amazing group of people. Sasha was the one, the alchemist, who was sort of creating these substances, and then a group of people who were testing them. And he was always capable of creating a new entheogen before the previous one got on schedule, until they created this different description. It's just like, I think it was MDA and all substances with similar effects, and that was the end of this. So I think we have a couple more there. That's one of the visits in his house. I just want to see you. This is Christina, for those of you who don't know her. Next one. Now, this is the laboratory, if you believe it. This is the laboratory in which he created all these amphetamine-related entheogens. Okay, that's probably like Rebecca standing, probably the size of these two squares on the... Do we have one more, or is that it? Yeah. Is this it? Yeah? Now, I would like to say one general thing about this new generation of researchers, but also people who are involved in the holotropic breathwork family. As Diane said, there is a large number of these people all over the world, and she herself has been involved in this training many years. A lot of the visits to different places we did together when I was still, you know, actively involved, and then she continued on her own. And when there were economic crises in South America, she did many of those trips, basically getting barely her expenses paid. And there are people who do something like that in India. So what I wanted to say is, it's what you see, that people who do this kind of work in a responsible way, that they achieve their own healing, psychosomatic, emotional healing. But you can also see a predictable transformation of personality, of the system of values, of the philosophy, of the life strategy. Like, you don't have to teach people ecology. When they have transpersonal experiences of identifying with, fish in polluted waters, or what's happening to other other species. They just developed this really almost like militant ecological awareness and determined that we shouldn't, you know, let the trash the planet, turn it into a bad womb. Developed the feeling that that there are global citizens before they are citizens of any particular country. They develop a need for service. And they also develop typically spirituality, which is universal, which is non-denominational, which is all-inclusive. You know, Joseph Campbell used to say that a useful deity has to be transparent for the transcendent. It's kind of pointing, you see, to the source out of which everything comes. But if you make a deity, sort of an archetypal image, opaque, and you start worshipping it, he said, you have idolatry. And you create a union of people who are willing to see it that way and worship that way, but you also automatically divide the world. You set it against another group. You know, we are Christians, you are pagans. Everybody has to be a Christian, and we either convert you or there's no place for you. We are Muslims, you are infidels. You know, we are whatever, Jews, going. And even within a religion, you know, we are Catholics, you are Protestants, and the centuries of killing, you know, for nuances within the same faith. So the kind of spirituality that develops in this work is universal, and this is the philosophy in the breathwork. Is you create, and I hope this is going to be the religion of the future. You create a supportive environment for people, give them a tool when they can enter what I call the holotropic state, and you respect spirituality and spiritual quest, but you have absolutely no investment whether this is going to go the Buddhist way or the Taoist way or the shamanic way or the alchemical way. I'm looking at Jorge over there, he's sort of nodding. So anyway, that's the basic philosophy, and it's very exciting to see that this is not just sort of useful for individual healing, but this could have, if it's done on a large enough scale that people can do this kind of work, we would probably turn into a species that has a better chance of survival. So I'm getting the signs that I have just sort of used my all my. So again, thank you, sort of all of you who were sort of continuing this work. I was with Albert Hofmann. I maybe show some pictures tomorrow. That's about four weeks before he died was my last visit with him, and he still, you know, he got the message, he got the news, you know, that now maybe psychedelics are coming back, that all his efforts were not wasted. So I'd see it also as a kind of homage to Albert, which is, you know, I wouldn't be here without Albert, so he certainly, I mean, although, you know, he was not my guru in any form, I didn't go to many of his lectures and so on, but what he produced changed my life so radically that I don't know where I would be without that particular sacrament that entered my heart. So thank you very much.